Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori. We've always thought that the most compelling story strikes the perfect balance between an honest look at the mess of life and the humor that can be found in the mess. To be perfectly honest, we don't really know how to live life without both the humor and the authenticity.
Our podcast might be a little bit of whiplash at times. We can spin from hard and deep to humor and laughing on a dime. The hard will be really hard, and the truths we share are the ugliest of humanity. We don't intend to make it seem like it's all fine or to pretty up the pain, but we also know that the joy we found is all the more profound because of the pain.
So we hope you can stick with us through the ugly, because there will also be joy and hope and humor. Welcome to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. Hello, this is Lori. Kate and I just wanted to provide a little intro to this next episode. We've been hearing feedback from folks that sounds like it's, for some, it's starting to feel like this started out as Kate's sharing and exploring her experience of trafficking. And some are giving feedback suggesting that it seems that we're veering off into territory of kind of targeting the chapel unfairly, that it is, some folks seem to think that it's a distraction. I can understand that. We have done several episodes that seem specifically to be addressing the chapel. Kate and I wanted to share that, yes, we are addressing concerns about the chapel, really more in the sense that it's important for people to understand that the failure to respond in a way that is supportive and decisive to allegations of abuse is a very important second wounding of people who have been already harmed by the misuse of power and authority in an abusive way. What we're trying to highlight here is the need for accountability and the need to educate ourselves as to how to respond in ways that don't create that second wounding. So this next episode, we provide an opportunity for folks to hear from a mother who alleges that her toddler daughter was sexually abused at the Lockport campus in the 2018 timeframe. And this came to us after we started the podcast, and we're just providing an opportunity for folks to hear from her. We are confident that you can hear from her and form your own conclusion about what you think about that. And that is this piece of what we're doing with the podcast is really just sharing what has come to us since starting the podcast. We think that it's important for people to hear what we've been hearing. So we understand that it can feel like we are going after the chapel. I get that. And that is certainly not our intention. This is not an act of aggression or bitterness. There's frustration. So you'll certainly hear that in our voices. There is frustration because there continues to be it seems like a stuck place. Please hold that perspective as you're listening to this episode. Thanks. I also want to add that there are some sound quality issues with some of this recording. We were doing the record with friends function, and sometimes that can create some glitching in the sound recovery. So we apologize for that. Hopefully you can kind of fill in whatever blanks there seem to be.
All right. Welcome back to our podcast, The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. I'm Kate.
I'm Lori.
Which you already know. So today we actually have a couple guests on our podcast. And in one of our episodes when we originally named the chapel, we had kind of skimmed over, and we don't want people to miss that this is a repeated pattern. It's not the first time. We're hoping it will be the last time, but this is why we're doing the episode. So we just want to share today a little bit in more detail another instance of when this happened. So today we have with us Amber Lee Peace and Tim Kennedy. And I'll let you guys introduce yourselves.
So my name is Amber Lee. I am the mom of a child abused at the chapel in the 2018 time period. And
so Amber Lee, why don't you start by sharing kind of your experience? What happened?
Sure. So my daughter and I attended the Lockport campus specifically. We had been going there, I want to say, we started going there around August of 17. That was the first time that I had really ever dropped my daughter off anywhere. So it was kind of a new, exciting thing for both of us. So she was had a little bit of separation anxiety. She hadn't been to daycare or really with any other like childcare places or anything along those lines. So,
and how old was she, Amberlee, at that point?
Yeah, so she was 2. And then we went there from when she was 2 to 3. One thing that I would do would be kind of just to, everything for her, she would always have the baby version of it, whether it was a plate, a cup, a spoon, anything was like the baby version of it. So when I would go to church, one way that I would help to kind of ease or help make going to King's World more exciting or more
familiar, comfortable.
For me, we called it baby church. Mama went to mama church and baby went to baby church. And she was kind of like, oh, okay. And it just seemed like it fit with the pattern of how she related to everything else. We were going, there were times where she seemed like she didn't really want to go. She seemed like she was, you know, sad to go. And other times she seemed okay. But in late April of 2018, my daughter started, you know, I noticed she started to have some changes in her behavior. She was a little bit more, she was starting to be aggressive with her dolls. She didn't ever really want to be alone at all, which was different for her at that point in time. But she was so young and she was growing, and it was hard to kind of tell, you know, is this normal 2, 2.5 year old behavior? But then in late April, she had wanted to reenact this game where would drop her off at baby church and the baby's mom would leave. And then she reenacted that the baby teacher would basically see the privacy, which she demonstrated. So Tiffany Pearl was the, she was the director of the Lockport King's World at the time. So she was the kind of the director of this, like the subset of the Lockport campus. Same, basically in that same 7 day period. My daughter tried again to play this way, but it was with Barbies this time, and everything kind of came full circle where she's and she ended up giving me the disclosure and telling me that there are privacy parties at baby church, where she reenacted and was able to give very specific sexual behaviors that were well beyond a child's scope of knowledge. And she was able to describe the person that did this to her. She even disclosed children involved at times, and one child she named by name specifically. I also want to stress that she only ever saw this child at King's World. So when she was telling me where this was happening and she was telling me how it was able to be done and who else was involved, there was no doubt in my mind exactly where this was happening. I knew what baby church was. That was as normal to us as saying we're going to the chapel on Sunday. That is what baby church was in our house, was her going to King's World. So immediately upon that kind of full disclosure from her, I called the police. Lockport at the time was unfortunately unique in the sense that they have or had at the time one detective for all. Was the day that she disclosed. I called the police. I took her to her pediatricians. The pediatrician, they called CPS. CPS doesn't have jurisdiction over churches, so CPS ultimately ended up closing the case, and they passed it off to law enforcement saying, it's not a daycare, it's not even really a preschool, it's a church, so there's nothing that we can do about it. So ultimately, they said there's not really anything we can do, and they let law enforcement handle it entirely from here. Mid-May, I was first contacted by John Camardo, the executive pastor. He called me and told my daughter's case being opened, and he asked me essentially what the details were. He wanted to hear it straight from me, what my report had been. And I told him all of the same things. He reported to me that he and some of the other staff seen the footage, and that they would get back to me. So the very next day, he called me and told me that Allison Granger, Tiffany Pearl, and the head of security at the time had all watched the video footage that they had available.
Okay, can I just stop you really quickly? I just want to, because we haven't named names on this podcast yet. So John Camardo, just for people who maybe are not familiar with the chapel, is one of the executive pastors that we've been talking about. Allison Granger is the director of children's ministry over all the campuses. And as you already said, Tiffany Pearl is the director of King's World at specifically the Lockport campus. So
when they called, John told me that the tapes they didn't feel showed anything significant.
There was on the video, there's an acknowledgement that there were individual adults taking children into the restroom, and that was dismissed mm-hmm. by John Camardo because it was said that it was only a 3-minute window. But anyone who understands sexual abuse and the dynamics of it understand that 3 minutes is more than enough time for something Absolutely. To happen to a child.
So then at that time, he said, you know, because it was only that 3-minute window, and he didn't feel that that was major, that we need to start looking elsewhere. And they again explained to him that my daughter was very specific where the private. And that, he tried to ask me, like, maybe she's confused about who else she goes to see. Like, he was alleging that, you know, maybe she's confused with her daycare. Maybe she's confused with, you know, wherever else I drop her off. And I was like, I don't drop her off anywhere else. And I had stressed that several times. So we all had a meeting. They explained their screening processes. They said that there's background checks.
So Kimberly Norris just released a really awesome parent training and says that in there, the background checks are essentially useless in a lot of these situations because literally, I mean, most of these perpetrators do not have a criminal record yet right. and may yes. not ever.
And when I didn't really back off just because they were telling me about the screening processes, it seemed like the meeting kind of took a turn and they asked me, you know, let's not tell anybody. We don't want to tip the perpetrators off. Tiffany noted that on the day that the video footage cut off, she even remembered something being very wrong with Callie that day. She said that she noted she remembered this day eerily well, and she said something just felt wrong. She said she wished that she had the tapes from the previous times that my daughter had been there.
At the time, they said that they only archive them up to 90 days. After that, they disappear. But when Camardo was, when I approached him on that, he said, oh, no, we are going to pay to extend the shelf life of those videos. I don't know if they ever did that.
Okay, so those videos were not available, but Tiffany remembered a specific time when it was quite evident that your daughter was distressed.
Yes, she told me that my daughter was in such distress at the sight of King's World that she ended up not even going into the room that day, that she said, like, Tiffany said that he had to carry which I wasn't called at all. Just to kind of backtrack a little bit, in hindsight, there were times where I would pick her up and I was under the impression that nobody would be changing her and she would be in different pants and nobody had called, which I found out was against policy as well, but it was allowed to happen. This was all in mid to late May that this meeting had occurred between the pastoral staff and the children's ministry staff and myself.
Amberly, I want to make sure, like, was there a conversation somewhere in here about giving Callie a chance to look at pictures of volunteers?
So I had asked, because Callie, the woman's name, but she could describe her, because I just want to note the volunteers do rotate. So she couldn't specifically say it's this person, but she could describe them. And this was stressed to the pastoral staff in that meeting, was that I don't know, but I have a description. And I left that meeting soon. I would know if even though it wouldn't have been a legal disclosure, because it wasn't my daughter saying it was this person on this day who did this to me, it would point us in the direction of who it was and what needs to change and who shouldn't be around children there at the very least. So that was one thing I was hoping that would happen when I left that initial meeting with all of the pastoral staff. I was also told that they would be working on policy changes and they would be working on a way to notify the parents that this, that there was an investigation going on regarding sexual abuse. Going by, I didn't hear anything back. So I contacted everybody again and said, you know, I left this meeting and I was under the impression that there would be some changes that were being made. I was asking again, are they letting other parents know that there was an open case regarding sexual abuse?
Amberly, like, what kind of time are we talking about?
So it was about a month and the case was still open. So when I contacted everybody again, because I was getting frustrated with not hearing anything, not getting any answers, I felt like everything was getting pushed under the rug. Like, if we don't talk about this, it's just going to go away. So I reached back out to everybody all at once at that point in time. And Allison Granger called me back and she told me that I just must have misunderstood when they told me not to tell people. She stated that the chapel doesn't need what she called needless chatter. She felt that talking about this was needless chatter and it was gossip and it didn't need to happen.
Well, this was also reiterated by John Camardo when Amber and I met with him, that, oh, well, we need to minimize the amount of people who know.
That was his. To the both of you, that was stated.
Yes.
So I want to highlight for a second that a month has gone by now since this was made, brought to their attention, and there were no volunteers removed from any areas of service at this point, as far as we understand. Is that correct?
That is correct.
That all you were asking for, you know, at all throughout all of this is just for that, to keep other kids safe, to keep your child safe, to keep other people's children safe. That was the entire goal that you had in mind, correct?
Yes, 100%. And additionally as well is that I strongly felt that there were other victims out there, because I do not believe that my daughter and the other child that she named were by any means the only children involved in this. Told them that, you know, you guys told me that you would move volunteers around. You told me that you were going to let other parents know that there was an investigation. You told me that you would also question volunteers to help get to the bottom of this. My daughter's case legally was very, very sticky. And so that's why I was looking a lot towards the chapel to be able to do something at the very least to keep children safe and to prevent this from happening again.
Mm-hmm. And let me just emphasize that this is the result purely of your daughter's age, that young children are, it's very difficult if they're rarely considered swearable in the sense that they cannot be asked to swear that this is the truth, the whole truth, blah, blah. And so mm-hmm. It is very difficult to consider a testimony from a small child legally, not because their reports are not valid or factual, but because the legal standard of expectation of evidence is so high that it is very difficult for a small child to be the person who testifies against in a criminal matter. All right, I just wanted to emphasize that for people who don't understand that there's a significant difference between the legal standard for a criminal prosecution and mm-hmm. the clinical assessment of whether a child is sharing a disclosure that is valid. They are worlds apart.
Yeah.
Yes, and this was probably in mid-July at this point. And their story changed to, we can't move any volunteers around because that would impede on an ongoing. And then John Camarda also told me that I would be dishonoring the selfless volunteers who volunteer every Sunday if I asked them to rotate for no reason.
Can we just observe that anyone who works with children, volunteer or not, would be happy to change their role if it meant protecting a small child?
That's the irony was, I only became the Lockport campus counselor as a volunteer. I was shifted without being asked to do that. They just said, we need you there.
Oh.
They weren't going to move volunteers, or they weren't going to let other parents know at this time, but that after the case was closed, they promised that they would question volunteers, and they would do an internal investigation.
Can I ask the question? Did we hear it all from the detective? I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this, but did we ever hear from the detective that they were advising the chapel to not remove anyone from a volunteer role to not impede in the investigation?
So I asked the detective that specifically, and she left. And said that is the biggest lie that I have ever heard, because when allegations come up in schools all the time, people are moved away. It is completely removed. It wouldn't have impeded on my investigation at all. So she, yes. So no, they were never informed that they couldn't do that. And but that was a lie that I kept being told time and time again. This is July. This is the end of July. I met with the pastoral staff in the mid to late end of May. Finally, at the end of the video footage to the detective at this time, she should have had it in May. Instead of dropping off the video footage, the detective informed me that she thought it was a little odd that Allison, instead of dropping off the video footage, had originally dropped off a typed up minute, actually drop off the video footage, but claimed that she did. So
right, like they had the video footage to watch themselves and to be able to type up a detailed report, why on earth would they not have handed it over to law enforcement? And yet they're saying, well, we don't want to impede on law enforcement's investigation. You can't exactly have it both ways.
The end of July is when I kind of came into all of this, and because I happened to run into Amber at the main campus.
At that point, Tim, you were involved. So can you talk a little bit about what that looked like?
Well, having known Amber from the Lockport campus and hadn't seen her in a couple of months, and she kind of laid all of this down for me, which I went immediately to Dave Drake, and I also got a hold of the head of security over this whole thing. And those were the two primary contacts at first. And well, because I went to the head of security, I was basically told to stay in my lane and don't be talking about this.
By the head of security?
No, I was called into Dave Drake's office. And he had been talked to by John Camardo that I was sticking my nose where it didn't belong, and that I better, you know, that it should have been brought to him and him only, you know, referring to Dave, to him only, and he would have dealt with it. I actually, Camber had asked me to sit in to a meeting with him. So I, of course, agreed, but when he gave us the speech that we need to minimize the amount of people that know about this.
Yeah, and I became involved. Suddenly, John Camardo wants to meet me for lunch and wants to talk with me, which was vastly different than it had been the previous months, where it was almost like, if we're not talking about this, and it's just going to go away.
So how was that meeting?
Pointed out that I could drive a truck through his policy with all of the holes, including the fact that volunteers are given basically carte blanche on whether or not they contact parents if they have to change children's clothing or do anything. There's no requirement for volunteers to actually contact the parents. I had already talked to the head of security, and he told me that security was never given the policies for the ministries that they were actually overseeing. So they didn't know what the policies on taking children to the bathroom were. They didn't know who could come and go. They knew none of that. Now, he told me that he had, as a staff member, had, and as the head of security, requested these policies numerous times. And he had always been sandbagged. But we were also at that same meeting with Camardo. We were promised not only would the policies be changed, but they would be posted on the church's website. To this day, they are still not posted.
A horrible thing happens. I don't think that people understand the gravity of how it shakes your entire world. As a parent, watching a child suffer and be scared, that is something that if you can't make that, I put that in writing to all of the pastors there, was that these are my stated motivations, and I will put in writing that I do not hold you accountable. I don't want anything from you, because when I was starting to get the, well, we don't think anything happened, what's this really about? I told them, I will put in writing that I don't hold you accountable. I don't want anything from you. And I still have those emails. So just to put that out there, because I know that a lot of times people wonder, is there a side from protecting other children from the hell that my family was going through because of what happened.
Right. At this point, your own child is safe. You, now that you know, you can keep her safe. But this was about other people's children.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Which is why you kept pressing the button of, right, we got to tell other parents. This is not, you know, gossip that we don't want people to hear. This is something that we want people to hear. We want people to make their own decision to be able to keep their child safe.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that motivation is wildly important to highlight.
I had been told at this point in time that they did move some volunteers. I think in September I was told that they finally moved the volunteers that were with my daughter. And I were still continuing to push for all of the volunteers who had access and who had fit my daughter's description to be moved away from the toddler. So this is October. I came to them in May. At that point in time, I'm getting in touch with the detective wondering, where are you on questioning people? Are you getting any suspects? There was one volunteer who would not return phone calls. And this same person was an active volunteer in the preschool room. And I stressed that to John, and John told me that he had never heard such a thing. So I don't know.
This was, this person was still volunteering at the chapel?
Correct, because they told me, person is questioned by the police, they won't hold them. Now, it was finally closed in November. They sent out this letter that was really dismissive, very minimizing of the entire situation. They lied about the outcome of the case, and the allegations were deemed unfounded, and so the investigation was closed, which wasn't how the case ended. Thing that we could think of was to make a Facebook page, like just to get the word out. Like it was the last resort to use social media, but at that point in time, it felt like it was the only thing that we could do. So I made the Facebook page Lillian's Light to talk about what happened and to bring awareness to this is what happened here, this is how it presented, and also to talk about child sexual abuse in general. How does it present? What can we do about it? That was in, I want to say early to late December. Got an email from John Camardo apologizing about the letter because it had clearly caused me harm.
So I just want to speak again to the pattern that we're trying to establish here. When it's like nothing, they're not doing anything, everything is fine, and then you kind of go public, right? Because that feels like your last resort, that's your only option. Again, this podcast was not our first thought, but here we are.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you got communication. There's apologies being sent that are kind of half well written. We're literally doing the exact same thing over again. So us talking to you was like this mind-blowing thing of like, oh my goodness, like it's not just us.
Right. Only 3 years later.
Right. Right.
Eventually the Buffalo News called back and they did the story.
Yes. I think at that point in time, because I had already made the Facebook page, the chapel had already severed contact with me. They were not willing to talk anymore. When I had asked them, like, what changes are being made, they never mentioned that they were going to partner with Ministry Safe. None of those things. No one. I had promised at the close of the case that there would be an internal investigation. That, like, as soon as the case was legally closed, there was no follow through on any of those things. And then once the news story came out, I mean, I really didn't have any contact with the chapel at that point in time. Either last email I got was that everybody who had been involved at all was CC'd in the same email and was told that the chapel would now be like severing contact with me and that they are praying for me and my family.
Will you just talk about what they should have done? What should this have looked like?
Well, I was called to a meeting with John Camardo and Dave Drake. This was my last day with the chapel. And I actually gave them these bullet points for their policies, which I have my doubts that any of it's ever been put into place. Because this, is, to me, was an action plan, not a reaction plan, which is what they tend to do. But that they're, first of all, under the policies, no individual should be allowed to be alone with one or just a couple of children. Security should be trained in all the policies pertaining to whatever ministry they have, and regular training, of course, for that security people. No security person should ever oversee a spouse or family member in a ministry, especially when dealing with vulnerable children. Mm-hmm. And parental notification is never optional, which is actually a part of their policy, was a part of their policy at the time, that it was up to the volunteer whether or not they wanted to contact the parent over any incident with the children. Mm-hmm. And then, if allegations are made, the police should have been immediately contacted, but they should have it as a policy that workers in the concerning ministry that the allegation should automatically be moved around. It's not even they don't even have to explain why. They just have to say, well, it's for the good of the church that they needed staff elsewhere or moved around staff just to keep people from getting stale, if nothing else. Mm-hmm. They don't have to give excuses. Just do it. And then... and this was a case, and it may have been the case out always, which is they put in charge of the so-called internal investigation somebody who was vested interest in finding nothing. They this is wrong on every level. It should always be, especially when in a church the size of the chapel, who has access to better than a dozen trained police officers, both on staff and in their congregation. They chose to go to an untrained person with a vested interest to make sure that nothing was found. And they should have an outside investigation group come in, be able to do the investigation properly, questioning, you know, looking at any surveillance, whatever, you know, but these are trained people, especially in sexual abuse cases. And then, but your first and foremost consideration, your priority should always be to protecting the victim, not re-victimizing, which is...
From your experience, is this new information? Like, or are these things that you think that an organization like the chapel should be clear to them at the outset?
I think every church, and not just the chapel, every church should have an action plan. We know that the chapel isn't unique. Right. We see this kind of an allegation popping up in huge organizations like the Southern Baptist Convention. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody has a reaction plan, which is cover up. Mm-hmm. Nobody has an action plan to say, okay, this allegation is made. We are going to protect the lambs. That's not what they do. I think this should be church wide, nationwide as a policy. Now, of course, this isn't exhaustive. More things could be put into this idea, but I think that it should always be. You assume, I mean, when you consider how few allegations are ever faulty, and usually it is in the case where there's a custody battle or something like that. But how do you get a 3-year-old to perpetuate a allegation out of the air? You know, that's just crazy to me.
Yeah, it doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. Not with the level of detail that we know that Amber Lee, your daughter, shared. Right. So it just does not happen. So any final comments you guys would like to
make? Find an advocate. Every time, find an advocate. Somebody who's going to take on the monster, drag it out into the light, and beat it to death. Because only by doing that do we end this kind of garbage.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And by the way, be the advocate. Be bold. Be brave. Mm-hmm. Don't stand in the shadows because you're afraid it's messy. It is messy, but there's not much that's more important than that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you guys.
Thank you so much.
And thank you. And please keep fighting the fight. We're with you.
Thank you. Thank you both.
If you or someone you know is stuck in a trafficking situation and needs help, please reach out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline by calling 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP, H-E-L-P, to 233-733.